Today is Monday, May 6, 2024, and it's again a sad morning, so I'll put it as I understand it, Biden is responsible for the death of another three young Jewish Israeli men. Yom HaShoah today, and our most valuable asset is our youth. Just think what could have been if not for Hitler. They estimate 1,500,000 young kids were killed by Hitler, lo aleinu. It hurts. It's what'd you say?
You didn't say the date.
Yeah, you missed it before. I just want to state, as I stated yesterday, it was not an easy Pesach for us. We thought we're young. We had a wonderful Seder, four generations, great-grandchildren saying the great Torah, but we got to bed too late. It took us the whole Pesach to get back to our limited health status before Pesach. But there was bad news yesterday. As you know, I dedicated the shiur to someone who was a regular student here until Corona. Then he was on Zoom, Steve Bressler. Steve died, Cholamoid. Wednesday last week, a very dear friend of mine, a friend from, thanks, Kenny. A friend from 1942-43 on, Monty Nussbaum, died. I want to dedicate this year to his memory today. I want to say a few words about Monty. When my mother switched me to Yeshiva Salanta, you all know the story, you've read it in Washington. So here I am, an American kid, and I'm being switched to a parochial school, the only Jewish parochial school in the Bronx, even though there are 700,000 plus Jews. And Monty Nussbaum opened the door for me, welcomed me. He was a year ahead of me. He taught me all the tricks. And when he graduated, he was president of the student council. A year later, I was president of the student council. And we remained in touch all these years. He came in Aliyah in 1965. And I remember when we came in 69, again, Charlie, maybe you remember, I don't know when it ended. After the Six-Day War, there was a tremendous interest in learning English. Adults. And Monty was a teacher for adults, and they used to run ads in the paper. The mysterious teacher, they'd show him with a beard but with his eyes covered with a mask. And then when we bought in Ralph Berlin, lo and behold, the Friday Shabbos morning minyan 6:30, Monty and I have been davening together for 54 years. It's sad. Wonderful individual, Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shamayim. He did a lot to perpetuate the Rav's memory. If you go to YU Torah, on every Pasha, he publishes Divrei Torah from the Rav that he collects and published. I arranged it with the Rav Shua, and it's mamash, a cover to the Rav's memory. On a other level, it's sad he married very late, and he married Shulamit. It's about 21 years ago. He was in his mid-60s, and they had a wonderful marriage. She's the almana today, a tzaddeket, and how she took care of Monty, and had a wonderful marriage. And it's sad because they both said to me over the years, if only we had met 40 years earlier. And you know, it's something to think about. You have to have mazel in life. Kriyat Yamsuf, the Gemara says, Shiduchim, and so much truth to it. He leaves no children. I don't know who's saying Kaddish. He does have a brother and a sister in the States, and there are nephews and nieces here, a few, and in the States. I know some of them. When you call the OU and ask a Shaila in Kashrut, Eli, you get his nephew. Rabbi Nussbaum is his nephew who answers and is the expert on Kashrut. What I'd like to do, and you're all welcome to help me, is everyone should take a Masechet, Mishnayot. We should be able to come to do a whole Siyum in his memory. His name is Menachem Yehuda ben Moshe. Mother's name was Esther. Now, I'll tell you one story. If anyone wants left the class, and if you know anyone to do a chesed, because there are no children, it's not that we can turn to hundreds and say, join us. But I want to tell you one story about his mother that recaptures what life was like onto 80, 90 years ago. His mother worked, she was the accountant or the bookkeeper for a firm that the owner was Shomer Shabbos. But he wouldn't let her leave Friday. He closed so he could get home for Shabbos. But she had a longer trip to get home. Evidently she worked in Manhattan. He lived in Manhattan. She lived in the East Bronx. And his mother would walk home from work every Friday, not to have a problem with Shkia. That's the home he came from. And his parents were zochet to raise all children, all Shomer Torah mitzvot. So I dedicate this year in Monty's memory. It's on a personal level, it's a very big loss for me. You know, I don't have many friends that I can say we know each other 80 years. There's one other friend we have also. His son is right on the screen now. And his son, when he first came in Aliyah, was actually here in person at every Shia. Nachum Lam, his son, his father, Avraham Lam, Rabbi Avraham Lam. What was his name in English? Arnold. My name, we were both Arnie. I was Arnie Rothkopf and he was Arnie Lam. And he too was part of our little chavura from the Bronx, from Yeshiva Salanta. And his story, how he got to Salanta, is also an amazing story. My story, Charlie, you remember the story from Washington? I was a wild kid, and the teacher says to my mother, she was a Jewish lady, and she says to my mother, listen, the children here are all Catholics, Italians, Irish. Your son, in a half hour, learns what takes them a week to study. He's bored. So she said to my mother, there's a parochial school, Salanta, five blocks from here. He'd have a dual curriculum. He won't be bored. And my mother had a Yiddish in his shama, the only one out of six children. And she switched me. Avram Lam is even a funnier story. His parents were immigrants, you know, running away from Europe. And in Stuttgart, saying, Geret Yiddish, the language at home was Yiddish. So he's walking on the street with his mother. And the Yenta hears them talking Yiddish. And she comes over and says, oh, Zagarotnikin, Deret Asheni Yiddish. I can't translate. God. What am I talking to here, Jews or non-Jews? Agarotnikin. Vic, help me. Agarot, a good, talented. And he speaks a beautiful Yiddish. So the lady says to his mother, Avu vete shikin them and at Yifgain in school, where were you going to send them? So his mother says, if again in public school, and ich vete them shikin in cheda. And I'll go to Cheder. I also went to Cheder the first year. I went to Cheder. So the lady, I don't want to say Yenter anymore. She has great schuyot. The lady says, Cheder azakin. Nein, dafgenin in Salanta. Dortens da a yeshiva that they kriegen a gute chinuch. You get a good education there. And that's how Avraham Lam wound up in Salanta. Both of us were emigres. And what can I tell you? It changed our eternity. Above all, the issue I raise in rabbinic authority, it haunts me. It just haunts me. Ben had mere yeshiva listen to Reb Chaim Moshe, I would not be here. Avram Lam would not be here. Where would we be? Where would Litvish Torah be? Chabad would be here. That's it. Satmar would be here. You follow? All right. I hold I give the right answer in rabbinic authority. And I have to give credit to my 8th grade Rebbe, Reb Henoch Fishman. He treated me like an adult. And he raised those questions with me. Imagine, I wasn't even bar mitzvah yet. I was bar mitzvah that year. And he raised the questions. I can still see him talking with Reb Chaim Moshe and what went on and everything. And then when I found Reb Pinchas Hirschsprung's memoir, you see, no one can dismiss me if rabbinic authority is just rakefet, no, another wise guy. But Reb Pinchas Hirschsprung, word by word. And I also, I always heard the story, I thought it was a joke, that how would the Chachmei, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin fellas saved? Because they heard the Litvish Reb Chaim Moshe is saying, don't take the visas from Sugihara. And they said, we have to do the opposite. And I thought it was a joke. Reb Pinchas Hirschsprung is an eyewitness and writes, this is exactly what happened. Okay. Let me mention something very happy. I picked up, I have many students that I really don't know from the classroom. I picked up a student, Eliezer Drew, Chabadnik, in the Muncie area, many years ago. And whenever he's in Israel, he'll come. Sometimes he came to Shir, etc. So evidently his son, one of his children, also listened to my Shayurim. So I inspired this Chabadnik, came in Aliyah, joined the army, Chayal Bodeid. At one of the events that they run for the Chayalim Bodeidim, the Tzaddikim that live here, so I was at Heichel Shlomo, a Friday night dinner. He met a Chayalet Bodedet, a girl who came in Aliyah from Paraguay. Could you imagine, with her two sisters, three young Jewish girls, Chayalat Bodedot, and here in Israel, they came back belay the nefesh, what we spoke about yesterday, the blood in their veins. Anyway, Menachem Drew and Yana Shmukla got engaged over the Chag. So we have a lot to be thankful for with all our difficulties.
Chana. They spell it with a J in the sentence.
Then I pronounce Chana with a J. I stand corrected by Yosef Mordechai Chachman.
Like Jose.
Got it, Mr. Hachman? Okay. Ellie, you don't understand what's going on here, but if you would be Russian, the H becomes G. His name is not really Gachman, it's Hachman. So he's correcting me with Janet Tachana. I read it as it's written, and I accept the correction most graciously.
I don't know 100%, but I'm
90% sure. 90%, good enough. Okay. Now, coming back to Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, here's the picture. It's unbelievable what comes up in life. Remember I told you Rabbi David Slavin was the person who wrote the doctorate in Sydney, Australia, on Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. My student, Rabbi Lieberman, had a simcha. His son got engaged. And who was in America at the time? There is Reb David Slavin. This is Aryeh Liebman. This is Reb David Slavin. This is at the L'chaim of Aryeh Liebman's son. So this is a beautiful picture they sent me. Now, I don't know how much you're following the news, but an amazing story happened that's been carried in every Jewish newspaper in the world, then Jerusalem Post. A German lady inherited her grandfather's stamp collection. And in the stamp collection, she found endless postcards in Hebrew and Yiddish that she did not understand, but she saw the addresses. This is the article, by the way, from the Jerusalem Post, A Long Time Coming Home. And this lady investigated her family's background. Lo aleinu, her grandfather fought for the Nazis, although he didn't believe in the ideology, but the old story, they drafted you, you're part of the scene, you don't have a choice. We know that story. And her conscience troubled her, who her grandfather was, what her grandfather did. But she inherited the stamps, the postcards, and she finally made contact with Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, and a few weeks ago there was a ceremony in Lublin when she gave the postcards over to the yeshiva. It's now part of the Lublin Historical Association. It's online. Anyone can view them. Anyone can download them. And it's a magnificent connection to what was Yeshivat Chachma Lublin, something real. The postcards are not of earth-shaking importance, but they reveal a living organism. Everything we spoke about, kids trying to get in, money being collected, dates for applying to the yeshiva, it makes everything we spoke about come to life. Then there's one more story that came my way. A Talmud who writes for the Satmar newspaper and very knowledgeable. So he wrote a story to me, and he gives me the source. He heard it from people who heard it from the Panovitcher Rav. And in 1928-29, when Rav Meir Shapiro was fundraising, came to America. That's when he met with Rabbi Revel and what was going on with building Yeshiva College and the building and the dormitory and the lunchroom, dining hall. So he met with Rabbi Revel. So at that time, the Panovitcher Rav was in America fundraising, and Rav Baruch Berlebowitz was in America with his son-in-law, Rav Reuven Grzybski. Those of you who know Torah, heard my lectures on Torah history 10 years ago, Rav Reuven Grzybski, later very big, Beit Medrash Elyon, Torah Vadas. So they all heard that there was a very wealthy Hasidic Jew living on the east side, but very cheap, impossible to get a substantial donation from him. And one time, the Panovitcher gets a phone call from the Maram Shapiro, and he says, look, I'm picking you up, I'm picking up Rav Baruch Ber, I'm picking up Rav Reuven Grzybski, and I'm taking you to meet this guy on the east side. Don't say a word to him, don't ask for anything, let me handle it. All right. They didn't know. But the Maram Shapiro, you don't say no to. He picks them up, a car, everything. They come to the east side. The Gevir makes a beautiful luncheon for them. And in the middle of the luncheon, the Maram Shapiro says to the Gevir, "Kum mit mir, ich darf mit euch reden bei Yechides. I have to talk with you privately." And they leave the Panovitcher and the Baruch Berlebowitz, the Kamenetz of Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav would leave them, and they go into a side room. 5 minutes later, they come out. Later, the meal ends, they bench, they thank the Gevir for his hospitality, get into the car, and the Maram Shapiro pulls out a check. They can't believe the amount, and he says, each of you will get your share. I'm taking. So they said, How did you do this? What did you do? How did you accomplish it? It's very simple. Why did I invite you? I said to the Hasidic Gevir, listen to me, Hetzu, if you don't give me the money to build the yeshiva, the only rabbis will be Litvakas like these Litvakas you saw. Is that what you want? That's the future? I must build a Hasidic yeshiva that we should turn out proper. The Hasidic Rabbonim. And the Gevir, that's what he heard. Forked it over. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. By the way, the Punisher of a Rav, I wrote back to Abramowitz in New York, who told me the story. I wrote back that when I came to Lower Merion, Balakin, with my first Stella, 61, the Punisher of a Rav had just been there before fundraising. And the Balabatim told me, oh, you don't know how smart this man is. So I said, no, I know that he knows how to learn, but give me a muscle. What do you mean smart? He says, fundraisers come to America. Half the time they succeed, and the other half of their time they're just wasting their time. The Punisher of a Rav knows who to go to and whom not to go to. Follow? That's the gauntlet of the Panovich Rav. Okay, now back here, back to the Lashon, and I'm Modeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which it gives me solace because it was Steve Bressler and Monty Nussbaum, Zichronim Levracha. The news this morning, America, Biden, the Jews around him. If I have time later, I'll talk about an article that just appeared in Atlantic. I just wrote a letter to someone who published on the topic as well. But let's come back here. We're in Volushin. The Netziv is the Netziv. He's now become the focal figure. The whole world knows him. And the Netziv, you see, it's you can't categorize him with the terminology of today. You'll take the great names we know. Take my Rebbe, his great-grandson, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Was he like the Netziv? There are differences between them. Rav, much broader. College under one roof with the yeshiva. On the other hand, synagogue council. Word by word, what I showed you in the Tshuva of the Netziv. Take Rabbi Aaron Cutler, son-in-law of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, Rabbi Zalman Zundel Mira. When I learned in Volushin, that's where everyone knew him. Came from Mir, was born in Mir. Rabbi Zundel, son-in-law of Rabbi Zundel Mira, deep ties to Volushin. Was Rabbi Aaron Cutler like the Netziv? No. Learning, perhaps, but Hashkafa, much more narrow than the Netziv. You follow? It's very hard to categorize him with the people we relate to, my generation. Your generation already is a different generation. And the Netziv, you'll find criticism from the right and the left. The left, he wasn't broad enough. The right, he was too broad. He was an individual unto himself. Now, I want to show you that shiva that I quoted to you, Memtet, Meshiv Dava, it's the most widely known of all his shivat, for obvious reasons, because Eli, we have struggled with the problem of synagogue council since 1876 in Prussia, Austria. Go back and hear my lectures. He wrote something else which is also widely quoted. I trust you've all heard, but I'll just refer to it. In his commentary on the Chumash, Hamakdava, and the Hamakdava, it's one of his most widely read Sfarim. People until today are Mavesedra with the Hamakdava. There's a lot of deep thought involved in the Hamikdava. It's based upon the shirm he gave every week to the general Volozhin community. Hamikdava. He gave not every week, I should say, I think every day after davening he spoke something on the Pasha. So the Hamikdava and the Hakdama, you can find it in the Beis Medrash very easily. It's called the Peticha L'Sefer Bereshit. And he Sefer Bereshit, I don't have to give you all the sources, it's there, you'll see it. Sefer Bereshit is called Sefer Hayashah. And the Hamikdava raises the issue, why is it called V'yesh Lavim Hatam? Why is it called Sefer Hayashah? And he refers to the Gemara, you're all familiar with it, the Dorim and the Medrashim. By its sheni, the Jews were frum, were Shomer Shabbos, they didn't worship idols, and nevertheless there was Churban. And why? Hayu Tzadikim Chsidim Vamelei Torah. Why was there Churban? And the Gemara says, Sinat Chinam. And the Netziv, his words, oh boy, Ach Hayu Tzadikim Chsidim Vamelei Torah, Ach Lo Hayu Yesharim Valichat Olamam. They weren't Yesharim, straight, proper, ethical, moral in their daily existence. Chavlid let olam. Al kain mipnei she sinat chinam she belibam ze et ze chashtu et mi she ra'u she noheg she lo kedat biyirat Hashem she chut setu ki viapikores. Wow. You see, you can see already an echo of what he was living through. They didn't act nice. They fought with each other. They put each one down. They Neusfaf, a Trumpenik, an Apikaitis. Wow. Unbelievable. And he goes on, and this is what caused all the problems. And Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yashahu, God is Yashah, Veinu Sovel Tzadikim Ke'elo, that live in such a fashion. And you can go on, but this is a very important quote from the Netziv. And it reflects his lifestyle, the period, the critique, the opposition, the infighting. I need not tell you, unfortunately, today, if you looked at the weekend newspapers and the weekend alonim, the advertisements, full-page advertisements, pro-drafting of the yeshiva boy, evidently are good at Yisrael, got a fortune of money. I never saw so many full-page advertisements that the draft is horrible, and the example they give, I tell you one example, unbelievable, that you hear Kol Isher in the army. I want to tell you, as far as I know, there is no lady singing all alone anymore in the army. They are sensitive to the fact that the Chadalim do not accept it. No lady. Let's say they're singing Hatikva, a few hundred soldiers, men and women. No, what's the Issa? Treikol Lomishtai? How many tshuva do we have on this? Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, the famous tshuva, Peres Chalik Bet, tshuva Chet. We punish Shalom. Then they say they have to compromise on their heksha. This is idiocy. The army is glad kosher. Well, the army can. You eat badats. The other one doesn't eat badats. Only magzikei hadat. The other one doesn't eat makzike hadat only kihilat. I mean, ribbono shel olam, a little seichel, a little unity, a little yashrut. And this introduction of the Netziv, epic making, widely, widely quoted. Now, coming back, I want to go back to Yeshivat Volozhin, Yehuda Dov. Be worth your while hearing yesterday's shiur. I got feedback or whatever. God grants me certain privileges because I'm older and I'm honest. I try to be yasha. Let's come back to Volozhin. And we're reading the memoir. I gave you all the sources. All right. This individual is a maskil. And you notice that he stresses the sources, his memory. So Volozhin had many students, and many of them were seeking to broaden their vistas. Out of Volozhin came many maskilim, many Zionists, not all religious Zionists. Mizrahi came out of Volozhin, Rabbi Reines, graduate of Volozhin, founder of Mizrahi. But there was a lot going on at the time, a lot of fertilization. Because like we said yesterday, we quoted the Rambam yesterday, we're all exposed to the environment around us. And we can absorb what we feel is good. We have to, obviously, not take that which contradicts Torah Hashem Tamima. And this was going on in Volozhin. And we'll come back to this. What's fascinating, on page 146 of the collection of memoir literature, so Berezhedevsky gives a description which is worth thinking about. He says, look, I've lived in Poland and now I'm in Lithuania. He says, what a difference between living in a Hasidic environment to living in a Litvish environment. The Litvish environment is dead. There's nothing to it. Dull, bored, Hasidic environment. Every morning after davening, a shtickle herring, whiskey, a kiddush, liveliness, a simcha, singing. It's a beautiful description. Very true, I have to admit. I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. In my shul, they fabrein, the chassidim, the litvakin, I come in, they know me. They invite me to make a lechayim. I can't even, who makes that time lechayim? What I got? Learning. Beautiful day. But he says, Cholomoyed Sukkis, all of Volozhin comes to life. Every night in the yeshiva, Simchat Beit HaShoeva, and the city comes out, all the people, the dancing, the singing, and he says, Amnonim Kolare Litak Tanot Yesisu Habei B'yom Tov, Ha'ir Volozhin Alta Al Gabeihem. And it's the yeshiva that gave it life. So it's a nice description that at least on Yontef, and particularly Simchat Beit HaShoeva, even the Litvakin come to life and wake up. And I know there's one joke I heard many years ago, but the joke has a lot of truth to it, that a Litvak and a Chassid get together, and they're each arguing, and the Litvak says to the Chassid, you're a bunch of drunkards. Every day you drink a lechayim, you find a reason after davening. You're a bunch of drunkards. And the Chassid says to the Litvak, listen, the way you daven, you are dead. There's no life to it, no joy. When you finish davening, all you can do is say Kaddish. But mir chassidim, mir zayin lebedik, we're alive. When we finish davening, a person is alive. You have to make a lechayim, a little schnapps, a little kichel, a little herring, and it's a very interesting description here. Now, he ends off. Remember when we met last time? We spoke. By the way, I just want to mention. I shouldn't forget. There's no class next week. Monday. There's only Sunday. Next Monday is Yom HaZikaron. Monday there is class. Sunday there is not. Okay. Sunday there is class. Monday there is not. I drank a l'chaim already. I'm a little bit drunk. A little bit mixed up. Okay, come back here. So here he describes another student. And he describes this 14-year-old kid from a wealthy home. And the kid lacks for nothing. And again, it's fascinating, his Hebrew, he's running every day, he's getting mailed, the runners, he calls them haratzim, what we call today, it's gone already, davarim. Well, we once had mailmen in Israel, we once got mail, all that has disappeared. Israel is ahead of the world, everyone uses email, Gmail. The only letters delivered in Israel are letters that they have to deliver by international treaty, like bank letters, etc. You get from overseas. I got the life insurance a letter. It only came 2 months after the life insurance was due. But ultimately, they deliver it because they have to. But it's unbelievable what's happened here. But they're saving billions of dollars, unlike America, where the post office is going bankrupt, but they keep going. Come back here. So this kid gets letters and money, and yet you look at the kid. He's pale. He looks fachezik. Again, I don't know how to translate that from Yiddish. Vic, what's fachezik? Down. How would you say? Let me hear.
Wasted,
down, pale, skinny, and everyone wonders, what is he doing with his money? And the author says, I found out. I came to the kid's apartment where he rents, and in his one room that he rents, there's a curtain in the middle. You pull apart the curtain, a library of endless books and periodicals. And his most important volumes are Gretz. Now, he goes on to discuss Gretz, and I'm saying a little bit more than he wrote here, but why was Gretz so important? Heinrich Gretz. Eli, are you familiar with Gretz? What, you're getting smicha from YU. You have a bachelor's from YU. Don't tell me you have a master's already and a doctorate yet, and you know nothing. Everything is possible today. Gretz. Heinrich Gretz. Zvi Gretz. Grew up. You're familiar with Rav Shem Shaful Hirsch. Baruch Hashem. Gretz grew up on the lap of Rav Shem Shaful Hirsch. But his Rebbe disowned him later. He had theories that bordered on not understood. Historic Judaism. Again, I pledge I can't now. Historic Judaism. Rav Hirsch would not accept that. The Rav would not accept that. Okay. But everyone loved Gretz. The Geschichte des Judentum, the story of the Jews. He wrote it in German. There's translation Hebrew. I have all of Gretz in English. Jewish publications, six tremendous volumes. Why was Gretz so important? And the answer is very, very simple. If you know Jewish history, you become a big Zionist. If you don't know Jewish history, you don't know what Zionism is about. You follow me? There are people that live here now for the day. They don't live beyond the day. No, you're going to tell them Zionism, come to Israel. When I left America, they were mourning me. Man is insane. Rosh Yeshiva, she was Chochanan.
Rabbi built the first Orthodox shul suburban Essex County. A contract with JPS, the publishers, but insane.
Yehuda Dov, the smartest thing I ever did in my life was to marry the woman I married, because she said to me, either you can stay behind, I'm going to Jerusalem, or you come with me. Baruch Hashem. I had enough seichel to go with her today. Arad, Afula. Wow. You want to see today? Here. This is an ad from Mishpacha. Ben, you tell me whether I'm overreacting, or maybe I don't know what's going on in the world. Full page ad. Unfortunately, I couldn't copy it in color. The machine was not working with color. An experience you can taste at Seared. It's a restaurant in Lakewood, 8 American Avenue. That didn't exist in my time. In my Forest Avenue, I remember. At Seared, everything is made in-house, including delectable memories. Come for a rare experience that feeds all your senses with farm-to-table ingredients, scratch-made dishes, the finest reds and whites. What the heck is that? Reds, whites? I'm not that stupid then. But when I grew up, who used these words? And an ambience to dine for. To find me a play, a double intender. And bring friends. Because company is the main course. All right, fine. Limited time price fix menu. 5-course choice menu. $150 per person. Am I normal? If I'm going to take 4 of us who go out, myself, my wife, Charlie, you and your wife, $1,000, but for $450, $600. That's without tips, gratuities. And I'm going to come, Ellie, I'm going to come and say, Aliyah. They're going to arrest me. This man is insane. Man is insane. Ah, but when you know Yom HaShoah, what today represents, boy, oh boy, anyone who doesn't come in Aliyah is insane. 100%. That's why Gretz is so important. And he alludes to it here. He says, ultimately, this person became a tremendous Zionist. I only hope, you know, he doesn't give details and we don't know the name and we can't trace him, but I only hope a religious Zionist, B'lev V'Nefesh. And that too came out of a Lashon. Now, you see, again, you have to understand, the Rav said, I quote the Rav said to Rav Ari Lichtenstein and Yitzchak Twesky and his close Talmidim, he said, you can't understand what we had to go through to get a little general knowledge. And I bow my head to YU. It was fabulous. The world was there before me. Here you're looking at a Talmud Ben who was thrown out of Lakewood because he was reading the New York Times in the dining hall. Am I making it up or telling the truth? Baruch Hashem, Ben's head is shaking. You don't realize that in Volozhin, and he comes at the end, he criticizes the Netziv. He says the Netziv is more open-minded than others. But let's have societies for Zionism. Let's have a journal dealing with these problems. And he says, we went to the Netziv, and we spoke to the Netziv, and we pleaded with the Netziv. But he's worried. Once you'll have a journal discussing Haskalah, Zionism, pen, he quotes the Netziv, Midaf Hav Meira, Efsha, pen, maybe, it'll lead to
happy courses. My dear students, it's a fabulous memoir, and that's one part of the lesson, the part of the Talmidim seeking, hunting, enlightenment, challenge, Zionism, Geschichte, the history of the Jews, who are we, where we're coming from, what we should do today. And this is part of the tension. And that's the beauty of YU. Again, I spoke yesterday, I was called Mr. YU, so I corrected it to Mr. YU in Israel. I don't know what's going on in YU. I left in 69. But that was the beauty of the education I received. When I learned in Lakewood, as much as I loved Rabbaran, as much as I loved the learning, the atmosphere, but I felt I'm choked in. I write about it in Washington. I bought a New York Times Friday morning, and when I came back from going for a walk and doing some other sidurim for Shabbos, my New York Times was ripped in four, and it was in the wastebasket. And the beauty of coming to YU, meeting the Rav ultimately, I met him at a very young age, but it was fabulous. There was nothing he could say or would say no to. Encourage you. Make your own decision. And I've lectured on this extensively. The Shulchan Aruch, Ad Shemale, Bitno, Kreso, Basar V'Yayin. And I think the Shita was, if we give you enough Torah, understanding, knowledge, you can handle everything and digest it in a Taridic fashion. And that was the beauty of YU. And you see here, in the Lashon, the challenge, the criticism. Yes, the Netziv is open-minded, but he wouldn't let us publish a journal. Pen, uses the word, pen, efsha, that was what can happen. Okay, but now let me go a drop further. And now let me introduce you to a Talmud that I personally owe a great thank you to. A Talmud of Velushin, a Frum Talmud. You'll see Velushin with a different lens, a different angle. Reb Yitzhak Nissenbaum, make believe you know the name so the ignorant pass for the wise. Reb Yitzhak Nissenbaum David, who was he? Why do I owe him a vote of thanks? I'm not ashamed to tell you that I was a good preacher in the rabbinate. I think I read about it in Washington. I got killed in my first rabbinate. I'm not going to go into more detail now. And they laughed at my sermons. I gave a sermon. I didn't know what I was up against. I was a kid of 23. I knew nothing. I gave something from the Mashkiach on an Eved Ivri, his mutter, in a Shifka Kananit. And I gave a whole sermon, the Fadabenkeit of a human being, that if you're an Eved Ivri, if you're sold because you rob, you become such a low level that you're permitted to marry a Shifka Kananit. It shows you're not in the high level of a proper Jew. And someone from the audience yelled out, Shifka Kananit, Marilyn Monroe. Yossi, you know the name Marilyn Monroe? Even that I have to explain. There's this gangster, former gangster, son gives a daf yomi, Sugarman, Rabbi Sugarman's father. He's all over the YouTube. So someone sent me a link, but if you type in Rabbi Sugarman, Jewish gangster, you get 20 hours of his giving shayurim. So he's talking about Langi, well, some Jewish gangster from Newark, and he had an ongoing affair with Gene Harlow. So who's Gene Harlow? He says, I say, the Marilyn Monroe of his generation. You follow Marilyn Monroe? He yelled out, Marilyn Monroe. Vic, that was the end of my sermon. You understand? Made me into a fool. So that's the next week. I announced that the pulpit belongs to the rabbi,
And instead of preaching, I am teaching. And I said, I'm giving a 6-part series on profiles in courage. Remember the title? JFK's book, Profiles in Courage. Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Moshe, Rav Silva, I knew how to speak. Charlie, by the time I reached the 6th Shabbos, people were walking from miles around to hear me on Shabbos. Winfield, if you know the area, was pulling in from Winfield to Bala Cynwyd to Lower Merion. Ah, so what am I talking about, Hitch? The Rav, tell me. Kenny, did you ever study with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik? Was Gahat Ashir, you heard once a shir from Rav Moshe? His father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik? Did they know how to preach? Did you read Rakefet's book on with the Rav telling stories about Rav Chaim? He got up once to give a drasha, Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Tshuva. He sat down. Who could preach? What can preach? The Rav? 5 hours, thousands of people were falling off their chairs to hear every word. No? Yehuda Dov, where did the Rav learn how to preach? Oh, the Rav said, in Varsha, when the Rav moved to Warsaw, running away from the communists, 1919, from Khaslovich, White Russia, he heard the Dashanim. And above all, he heard Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum was the official darshan of the city. And he was a preacher par excellence. Vic, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. The Rav learned how to preach from Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. If I can give yesterday's class as I gave it and what people told me after the class, I have to thank Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. With me, Charlie? That's Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. Now, he wrote an entire sefer of his zichronot. Let me first tell you about Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. But I'm quoting him from the same sefer I quoted until now. Yeshivat Litta, Pirkei Zichronot, put out by Mekha Shazar, beginning on page 94. Now, who is Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum? Let's put it into years. Born 1868. Killed by Hitler, lo aleinu yamach shmo v'zichro, 1942. He studied in Voloshin, was a big Talmud Chacham, and he became very involved with the nascent religious Zionist movement, 1902, officially Mizrahi. He worked under Rav Shmuel Malheva, was one of the great religious Talmidei Chachamim of Chibat Zion, Chovevei Zion, Rav Shmuel Malheva. His drasha at the, I believe it was the Zionist, pre-Zionist Congress, Chovevei Zion, 1884, the drasha was the most famous drasha ever given in modern times. Atzamot Hayaveshat. If you saw the Alonim this past week, everyone is quoting the drasha. The Atzamot Hayaveshat. Can these bones live? Can they come back to life? And that's Yom HaShoah. One man went to Europe, went to the camps with these groups. A survivor died this year. The survivor who, I believe it's the same one who would eat falafel every year on the day he arrived in Israel, turned it into a whole ceremony. Israeli falafel represents us. And in Auschwitz, he started shouting, "We won, we won." And he took out the pictures of all his children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. "We won, we won." And we have a right to say that to the assimilated American Jews. You take Barbara Streisand, who is Jewish, puts out a tremendous book becomes a bestseller, and page after page is filled with her boasting about the pork, the bacon, the oysters, the clams, the tafis, the shkatzim, remushim that she eats. And I challenge her, how many grandchildren does she have? One son, don't want to go further. And look what we have. Look what we have. I know some of the people sitting in front of me. We can fill a stadium, not the basement, just downstairs. Be too small. We can fill a stadium with our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, Kanayin Hara. This is, he pulled out. This is our revenge. The dead bones have come to life. Baruch Hashem. It's terrific. He worked for Rav Shmuel Malava. And he then went around preaching itinerant Magid, Zionism, 1900, settled in Warsaw, and was officially hired as the Dashan of the city. Okay. That was a title. In Vilna too, one of the Dayanim was the Dashan. He was, one Dayan was Kashrut, one Dayan. That was the Rav's uncle, Rav Menachem Karakovsky, the Avodat HaMelech. He was the official Dashan in Vilna. And the Rav desperately wanted to succeed him. I've spoken about that too. I hope people are making notes someday, because this is knowledge that it's not, it will be lost as our generation passes on. But okay. So what's his story? Beautiful story. Let's see, Alei Chelet, I just want to be sure. He wrote a memoir. He wrote a memoir of all that he saw and all that he did. Alei Chaldi. Chaldi means my life, my life. It's a biblical word, the story of my life. And this is taken from that memoir. And he was a kid in a shtetl, a little shtetl, and very bright. So it reached the point that his father felt that being in the shtetl has nothing to offer him. And his father worked for a company where they tied in with an individual who was the son-in-law of Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, the Aruch, we're talking about the Aruch HaShulchan, the son-in-law, Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein. And as you know, Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, his daughter was married with Zivik Sheni to the Netziv. So the son-in-law, who was a wealthy man and a Talmud Chacham, tested the kid and was very impressed. Said, look, I'm sending you to Voloshin. You belong in Voloshin. And I'm going to send you a few ruble every month to support you. And he gave money, it's a daladerich and money. And he comes to Voloshin. Comes to Voloshin. He has two letters. One letter from the Rav of his city, of his shtat, and one letter from this wealthy man who's related to the Netziv by marriage. And he comes on a Friday. The Netziv tells him right away, go to the yeshiva, arrange where you'll sleep, and come see me Saturday night. He comes Saturday night, the Netziv talks with him in learning, and you're accepted into the yeshiva. A day later in the Beis Medrash, he gets, the Mashgiach comes in and says, the Rebbetzin wants to see you. The Netziv's Rebbetzin was the sister of the woman, the sister of the wife of the man who sent him. So she takes him in and questions him 1,000 times over about my sister, about her husband, about, and at the end she says, any problems, you come back to me, we will take care of. So the kid comes in, he's looking for the siren. Let's. Shehamalam.
Sodom Batim of Lina and Kisodom. Choloch Yaymech Ucho Yosin Hesha Hazan Ham Siyam Hospital Martin Tich Tayyam and Rostam There's a little super Ben Rofetet, for whom you got Israel and called upon the Tatar.
I have one schut, I also write about it in Washington. When we came to Minsk, going back to January 1981, so they told us about the monument. It was the only monument in all of communist Russia, Soviet Union, that had Yiddish on it, in Yiddish letters. And they told us where it was. It wasn't far from the hotel that we were in. They were afraid to go with us because they're frightened talking to tourists. They could be sent to Siberia. And we took a picture of the monument and I sent it to Yad Vashem. And they said it's the first time they had a picture of that monument. I believe the picture is in Washington of the monument in Minsk. And I probably, among the tens of thousands that were murdered in that ravine, are absolutely among them my own relatives, because part of my family came from Minsk. All right, we have to go further. We're in Volozhin. It's also, I have a very valuable possession. I should bring it and show it. Everything, you grow old, every little thing you do becomes a little harder. I gave a lecture in Leningrad, and this already, I believe it was 89, our final visit under the communists. But at that point, things were easier, and they were so beloved students and so overwhelmed by the lecture, they gave me a gift, a handmade book of what Volozhin looked like in 89. They had gone back and taken pictures, and the fascinating volume. I have it at home, handmade. Okay, coming back here. So he arrives at the yeshiva, and he describes the overwhelming impact. See, this is something we take for granted today. All over Europe, people sat and learned, right, in the Beis Medrash, Akloiz, Ashtibel. How many were there? 15, 20. Here you come to Volozhin, 300 to 400 students sitting and learning. He could barely get a seat. He describes how, when he first came in, he finally, at the very end, near the entrance, they found the place on a bench for him. That's how crowded the yeshiva was. Then he describes how the mashgiach comes to him, the person in charge of the sfarim, and he says, what do you want to learn? He says, Baba Kama. Says, wait a minute, goes into a side room, comes back 2 minutes later with a Baba Kama and a Sanhedrin. Now see, this is very revealing. It shows you in Volozhin, you could learn whatever you want. It was no organized, formal shir like we have in Lakewood and YU with Chaburas and Mir. Everyone is learning the same thing. Volozhin, you call your heart wants to learn this? Fine. What was the second Gemara? Sanhedrin. Why did he give him a Sanhedrin? The Mashgiach explained that there's a shir every day, and the shir today is in Sanhedrin. And this is what I told you, in Volozhin, they went Keseda Hashas. You follow me? It's not like we come into yeshiva. We have to learn how to learn. By the time you reached Volozhin, you knew how to learn. You didn't belong there if you couldn't handle a Daf Gemara with Rishonim and a Rambam and a Ravid. And so today it has to be organized. If it's not organized, the student can... One student told me, I don't want to mention names, but a dear student said to me, he spent 2 years in a certain shir in YU. He said, I learned nothing. The Rebbe was a big lamdin. He threw around Achronim on top of Achronim. But you never learned how to approach the basic text. And in Volozhin, you knew. So the Shayurim went from Bracha to Nida. And it was Keseda. So he gave them two Gemaras. And he learned Baba Kama. But he also learned Sanhedrin, because he participated in the Shayurim. Participation was not compulsory. But that you had to be in the Beit Medrash and learning, there was a Mashgiach who went up and down, and he took track of what was going on in the Beit Medrash. I have a feeling Lakewood is like that today, that it's so big that it's not that you're compelled to go to any class, but you have to be learning. There is a check and balance that you're not just sitting there to impress your girlfriends that you're learning in Lakewood. Okay. And then he describes how he comes to this apartment. He's looking for a bed to rent, and they tell him there's a bed available in this apartment. And he describes, he comes in, Sham matzati et hamatbit habotki shelamat shmones rei sha'ot bayom mana sabach hakach in any other day. Too bad he doesn't give you a last name. They don't know a last name. See, this was the tremendous problem in Europe, and when you do research on the yeshivas in Eastern Europe, everyone was known by the city they came from. I would have been called Aaron Branksa, maybe Aaron Maplewood at a later stage, but no one would know where you're from exactly, what your last name is. And he describes a Matmid Habotki. What does Habotki mean? It has to be a European little shtetl who learned 18 hours a day. But then he describes another roommate was Reb Zundel Mira. Reb Zundel from the city of Mir. Who is that? Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer. Later, the Sletzke Rosh Yeshiva, the Kletzke Rosh Yeshiva, the father-in-law of Rabbi Aaron Kotler, the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. And then he writes, he's complaining. He says, I was of small stature, and they only gave me a half ruble a week. And that was the yeshiva. I still remember in YU, when I came to YU, the ladies auxiliary of YU, the poor kids, you got stipends from the yeshiva. Could you imagine? You got stipends for food, for clothes, before Pesach, before Rosh Hashanah. Many students were taken down to 7th Avenue, the garment industry, and Yiddish mentioned Jewish people, free suits for 100 kids. And this, the yeshiva, the ladies auxiliary arranged it. Maybe they paid them something for the suits. But it was chesed, staka. He only got a half ruble. And he complained. The lady tells a story. Someone else from his city came to the yeshiva, and this person couldn't learn. He's nowhere near me in learning, he says, but he was tall and heavy. He got more money because he has to eat more. And he said that he complains, but he said, Baruch Hashem, for that half ruble and what his father's acquaintance was sending him, it covered the board, the room, the food. And then he describes the Shayurim. See, this is a first-person account. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik gave the shir. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the Netziv gave the shir. And the Shayurim were totally different. Reb Chaim, his real shir was Monday. Sunday, Tuesday, he did the Gemara. There's an expression in Yiddish, et upgedavent the Gemara. Quick. He says at times when they gave a clap, a bang, the Rosh Yeshiva is there, the Zogin Shia, yes, the Rosh Yeshiva is here, he's going to say Shia, and he describes. Anyone who didn't want to hear the Shia walked out, they went to eat then. Those who wanted to hear the shir had to push forward and get around the table where Reb Chaim or the Netziv would sit. And Reb Chaim was so quick on Sunday, Tuesday, that sometimes by the time you got there, he finished the blot. The shir was over. But Monday was the chiddush, was Reb Chaim. The revolutionary new insight into the Gemara. And he says, Eidut Nemana, that Reb Chaim's Chidushim on Monday were enough to occupy the minds of the top Talmidim all week. This was Reb Chaim. He says the Netziv Shir was totally different. Was the pshat, the gemara, the interconnection, what they used to call l'shitato. Do you know what that meant? Are you familiar with that term, l'shitato? A lot has been published on it years ago, not today, but years ago. L'shitato, that you take a tana, you take an amora, you try to show that his viewpoint in this mesechet is basically his same thinking in another mesechet, that there's an interlying connection between Aleph to Bet to Gimel. That's pshat. It's not the charifet of Reb Chaim. That was the Netziv. Friday, the shir was always devoted to the rush. Could you imagine? He would take the rush and analyze his psakim, how he understood the Gemara, where he differs with the Rif or the Rambam. It was a little bit different, but it required bekiyut. You had to have already bekiyut, the Gemara, the basic Rishonim, and this was the Netziv, this was Reb Chaim. More than that, see, the Netziv had a certain kedusha to him. He said the shirim with tefillin on. Didn't take off the tefillin. They say about Rav Kook that he went with tefillin, and you can see where he got it from, because Rav Kook was much more influenced by the Netziv. They call him the Talmud Mufak of the Netziv than he was by Reb Chaim. But it's fascinating, the difference in personality, the difference in response, the difference in approach. Now, Reb Chaim was famous that all week after the Chidushim on Monday, students would bother him and talk with him and question him and argue with him, and he would walk up and down the Beis Medrash with his arm around the student. One student, they complained that he's not learning enough. He's just talking with Reb Chaim. Then it said, he has Reb Chaim. What's that in English? Where you make bread, brown wheat, millstone on his shoulders. It means, how can you learn if you have to support your wife? You understand? It's not like today. But it's a play on words. Reb Chaim al Shechmo. Reb Chaim is holding him. How do you expect him to go and sit and learn? He has to deal with Reb Chaim. You see, this was the atmosphere. This was Reb Chaim. This was the Netziv. They cast a different image, a different personality. And he writes, Reb Yitzchak Nissenbaum, how he at one point was chavrusa with Reb Meir Berlin, Reb Chaim's son, or he was older than Reb Chaim's son. He was teaching him, not Reb Chaim, the Netziv's son, correct me. Reb Meir Berlin, remember his second marriage, this is his son, Reb Meir Berlin, Reb Meir Bar Ilan. And I want to just say a word on Reb Meir Berlin here. I have a very interesting letter. And this too is important. People write to me stories that you don't have in print. And this letter was sent, again, I quoted him yesterday, Rabbi Moshe Katz from Chicago. And he tells the following story that he heard from Rabbi Mendel Gettinger. Rabbi Gettinger, you recognize the name, was a very important Rav Talmud Chacham, Young Israel of the West Side, the Upper West Side, the Young Israel. I understand it's been resuscitated today. I believe his grandson is the rabbi, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I believe I was told. So Rav Mendel Gettinger was a Talmud of Rav Yitzchak Kuttner Chaim Berlin. And there was a famous rabbi in New Jersey, Rabbi Riff. I believe Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Riff, and named after, he's part of the family. I yet met him. He was in Camden, New Jersey, right near the end of New Jersey. We were on the other side, Philadelphia, main line, and then the main line. There was a big mikveh in Camden. I remember when the mikveh in Philly was shut down, they went to Camden. We organized carpools to Camden. So Rav Riff had a daughter, one daughter who was a genius, and Rav Chutner got in touch with Rav Riff and said, look, I want to propose a Talmud of mine for Shidduch. I'd like you to meet Rav Mendel Gettinger. And Rabbi Riff said, look, I can't speak about a shidduch from my daughter. My uncle, Reb Meir Bar Ilan, is in the States, and I cannot consider a shidduch without his haskama. Rav Chutner called Reb Meir Bar Ilan and said, I want to come to you to introduce my Talmud to you. So Reb Meir Bar Ilan said, I has no time. He was there for World Mizrahi and has meetings around the clock. So Rabbi Chutner said to Rav Meir Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, you must have some time set aside for learning. And Rav Meir Berlin says, yes, I get up at 3 a.m. to learn. So Rav Chutner said, fine, I'll be there at 3 a.m. and hangs up the phone. Next day he arrives with Rav Gettinger at Meir Berlin at 3 a.m. and sure enough, he's sitting and learning, Svarim open, and Gettinger looks at Rav Berlin, Rav Berlin looks at him, and says to him, Nu, was Haltman, what are you holding by? Let's talk, let's see what you know. And Gettinger said, I was learning, I'm quoting Rabbi Gettinger as he was quoted to me, he was learning a very difficult sugya. And Rav Meir Berlin responded to him as if he had studied it yesterday. It was Munach Lefanov Bekufsa. Perfect. And Rabbi Katz writes, some people think Rav Meir Berlin was some modern Orthodox rabbi. He wasn't. He was vintage Volozhin. So you see, this is a letter, a story that we don't have in print, but it captures Rav Meir Berlin. And here is a kid, he's learning with Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. Then he describes his great joy, and I here have to tell you, it just takes me back to my own. We all have certain experiences in life that mold you and shape you and never leave you. If you read Washington, I had an experience. I was a kid in high school, and I'm learning with my chavrita, Ray Weinberg, Paul Weinberg. I have two chavritas over the years, Ray Weinberg and Jerry Blau. And we're learning in the Beis Medrash. It had to be Hanukkah time because there was no English classes. We only had morning classes. And suddenly the Rav walks in. We knew who he was. He lived, his mother lived across the street. He would stay with his mother whenever he came to New York. And he comes in, I can never forget it. And the Beis Medrash was empty, a handful of students. There was no regular learning then at that time. And Ray and I are learning, and he says, excuse me, could you boys help me? And we jump up, Rav Soloveitchik, whatever you want, we'll be happy to help. And he says, come with me outside, my mother is waiting, could you go with her to the Associated, that was two blocks away from the Yeshiva supermarket, I doubt if it's there today, and help her carry back the packages. Oh, we'll be thrilled, happy. And we went with the Rebbetzin to the supermarket, and she bought maybe 10 boxes of matzah. And we divided it up, Ray and I were carrying back. I wish I could meet Ray. I lost him in Haifa. I haven't heard from him in years. I hope he's alive and well. I wonder if he remembers this. And we're walking back, and we were chutzpah. You know, American kids are chutzpahdik. And we say, Rebbetzin, was darf man azeifu matzah, it's nicht Pesach yet. Why do you need so much matzah? It's not Pesach. And she explains to us, chadash. We didn't understand the word, Ben. You follow me? Chadash. Today I'm a big London. I can give shayurim. Is it Neuhagen in Lakewood? Isn't it Neuhagen? Yeah, I don't have to tell you. Rabban Soloveitchik, what happened in Chicago, the Rav in Boston. Chadash chasum in Torah. B'chom akom. What's meant this? Jewish farmers, non-Jewish farmers. So that experience that we helped the Rebbetzin, it remains with me until today, that I had the schut to help Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein Soloveitchik. Remains, cannot remove it. It inspires me. It empowers me. So he describes learning in Volozhin. Again, what I told you, they learned around the clock. They took what Ovadia's son said, that Israel only survives b'hatzlacha rabah. But next week we have a date.
Next week is
over. 2 weeks from now. Let's hope it holds out, but I don't drive that much.
Okay, I'll try to come Sunday.
If you come Sunday, we'll do Sunday.
I'll email you and come to your house and go through.
No. You know, Adkin Beikach is, and it's Baruch Hashem fine. Coming back here. So, they learned around the clock what Rav Avadya's son said, that Israel only is surviving not because of the army, not because of the Matek Klali, but because our boys are sitting and learning Torah. Right? They believe the world only continues because the boys are learning Torah. I would agree with them, but I don't agree with Rav Avadya's son. If you're attacked, you have to fight back, and we can't get Ponovitch Yeshiva to suddenly Hebron Yeshiva. They're going to march and fight. You don't know what to do. But we need a regular army. We need learning too. We need both. And Gemara and Megillah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, Halavai, someone should publicize the Gemara and explain what the Gemara means. But so there were two shifts. Some people went to sleep after Maariv and came back to the Beit Medrash at 2 a.m. Other people learned till 2 a.m., and
then they went to sleep. So he describes that he was learning 2 a.m. on. He was part of the second Chabura. And suddenly the Netziv comes into the Beis Medrash, covered with snow. He just got back from visiting elsewhere, fundraising, whatever he had, rabbinic conferences. And he has to say shir tomorrow. And he goes over to Rabbi Yitzchak Nissenbaum, puts his arm around him, and says to him, Vu Hautman, what are they up to in the Masechet that I'll be teaching tomorrow? And he told the Netziv exactly where everyone the last year was given, what they're up to, because while the Netziv is gone, the Mashkir would take over this year. And he said the Netziv was so happy, he hugged him and thanked him for telling him. And he said all his life, that hug from the Netziv inspired him. Beautiful, beautiful memoir. Then he describes the davening. It's mind-boggling what you have here in the memoir. Then he describes the davening, how the Netziv would daven slowly, would cover every word, and the Chazan would wait for him, and then Chazaras Hashatz until the Netziv finished. And he said the students held a small Tanakh, and when they were waiting for the Netziv, they were learning Tanakh. He did it too, but he said he realized then it's a disgrace for davening that you're learning while davening can't be. No, but it's a description of the Netziv's davening. Tell me, doesn't this remind you of something? Doesn't Reb Moshe have a tshuva where someone writes to Reb Moshe and rebukes him because Reb Moshe was seen learning Mishnayos during Chazaras Hashatz? You see, it's a tshuva for Reb Moshe. And Reb Moshe apologizes. He says, no, you're right, even though he tries to be Melamed Zchut, but he apologizes, you're right, I shouldn't be doing it. This is exactly the feeling you get when you read this memoir. And he felt, no, it's not right to do. And I have to be honest, I have that Yetzer Hara, that Litvak in me. I'd like to put, I'm learning, alright, Chazara Sesha. No, daven like a mensch, and daven with kavana, and listen to the Chazaras Hashatz, say Amen. I try to find the Heter because I never finish on time to hear the whole Chazaras Hashatz. So let's say I pick him up after Kedusha. I'm sorry. Don't be a wise guy. Be a good Jew. And let me end off. There's one more story here that you will hear more about. And this too captures the era. Litov, oh Litov, not everything was so rosy, and the challenges, it's overwhelming what we've been gone through. And again, I refer you to yesterday's shiur. So one time, the Netziv is talking with a Talmud, and he looks at this Talmud, and he smacks his face. Why? Shaving with a razor. The Netziv looked at his face and saw right away, and the Talmud left the yeshiva that day. And according to Rabbi Yitzchak Nissenbaum, the Netziv was right, he shaved with a razor. So you see, this opens up the Pandora's box. The outside world influences us. I'm clean shaven. I told you yesterday, I suffered during Sfira. When I came in Aliyah, I saw no one shaves during Sfira. Then later, my sons-in-law don't shave. But my grandchildren, I have some who don't shave. If not all, I don't hear. So, all right, Lo Na'imli, I took Rabban Lichtenstein's point of view, and we shave on Friday. Okay, I'll shave Erev Yom Ha'atzmaut, of course, and then on Friday. But you see, we're influenced. Are you allowed to shave? Not allowed to shave. My Talmud, you all know, in Coney Island, he's totally opposed, not allowed to shave. Rav Sfarim on it. Rabbi Wiener, Moshe Wiener, big Talmud Chacham, great Jew. Rav Moshe refused to give him Haskama. How can you say you can't shave if all of Mir, if all of Slabatka, if all of Tells, everyone shaved? Motzi Laz, I'll reshine him. Okay. But we're influenced. And Ad Kedei Kach, a razor. I saw that in the army when I did basic training. There were Shomer Shabbos Jews from Gruzia, from Bukhara, doing basic with us. And we saw them shaving with razors. It was frightening. All right. An electric shaver. Can't fault me. I brought in Norelko to the Rav. The Rav is here. I'm there. I give it to Rebbe. I say, Rebbe, can we use it? It's revolutionary. They came out that the shaver goes around. I remember, take it apart for me. Show me how it works. Took it apart. He says, why can't you use it? It's a scissors. You know, the same, like a scissor, except not going like that, but going like that. The guard and the razor, the blade. You can't have one without the other. But this story, even in Volozhin. So a Vic walks into Chaim Berlin at the time that his uncle taught there, and Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, and he would say, in Volozhin they caught students shaving with a razor. And the new element would say, it's a Kenny sign, it can't be. What are you telling stories like that? It's a fact. Here it is. Eyewitness, Rabbi Yitzchak Nissenbaum. My dear students, this is another description of Volozhin, the students, the atmosphere. Takes us back in time. And this was the world 170, 180, 150 years ago. This was Volozhin. We're far from finished. Next week, we meet Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Next 2 weeks, next time I lecture in this class, we meet Reb Chaim Brisker up close. I wouldn't miss those lectures for all the rice in China and all the hell that will happen to Turkey. Do you realize how many imports we have from them? I thought it's only food. It's unbelievable. I read a list. Yet my daughter left me yesterday's Yisrael Hayom. I couldn't believe it. We have to become totally self-sufficient. In order to be self-sufficient, we need 12 million Jews here. 1 million for each shevet. And we'll have enough workers. And then, Abe, we need Jews who are willing to be builders, street cleaners. How do we accomplish that? Every Jew. You know my vatna, the chinuch in Israel is terrible. You know why it's terrible? If it would be any good, every last person would be a professor and a medical doctor. You wouldn't have anyone else in the borough. But the chinuch here has gotten better. Find me street cleaners and zookeepers with long beards and payas. We have some. Ellie, that's the challenge to you. Understand? Any questions? Yes, Yessi.
What happened with the shidduch with Rav Meir Berlin and Rav Kutner and Rav Gettinger?
They were very happily married and lived many, many decades together. And Rav Gettinger's daughter, Rav Gettinger's wife, Rav Riv's daughter, so there was a Daf Yomi, and Rabbi Riv's daughter attended. And Rav Avigdor Miller, I think, was giving a sicha, maybe it was not Daf Yomi, it was a sicha, and it was Rav Avigdor Miller. And Rav Gettinger's wife attended. She was a big fan of his.
and someone complained, Furai, a woman coming to shul, listening. And the next week, when Rav Miller was giving out sheets, the first thing he said was, pass the sheet over to Rebbetzin Gettinger. He showed his appreciation for her attendance. Now, the Gettingers had wonderful children. Their daughter was my student. I don't want to say many years ago, because you don't talk about years with a woman, but it was long before you were born, Yessie. And she was a brilliant student. She's married to a medical doctor, I believe he's a kidney specialist. He's very highly thought of. Unfortunately, they live in Chicago. And the Rebbe doesn't consider anyone a good Jew unless they live in Israel. I make exceptions if they're in the middle of life and they can't leave him, but their children live in Israel. Ah, that's a good Jew. And I've told that to many of my Talmidim. Till your first child makes Aliyah, I don't feel happy about your spiritual life. Got it, Vic? No one can convince me otherwise, and now I don't have to be convinced otherwise. The New York Times is convincing you. Wow, it's unbelievable. I want to thank everyone in front of me for honoring me with your presence, and in next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up where we left off. I wouldn't miss next Sunday's shiur at the source I'm going to show you. Eli, life, when I came in Aliyah, I saw I could never make a living. Today it's better in Israel financially, but I made up my mind I want to know Kol HaTorah Kula, everything. I'm far from it, but no one can accuse me of not trying. But next week, the source, I'll dance at Kazatska in Red Square next time I'm there, that what I heard in Bnei Akiva as a little kid was true. The Hungarian survivors spoke the truth. Hamze Geret Emes. Is it open to the world, the Yomo?
Yes.
Everyone around the world, any questions?
Camden, Cherry Hill is an outgrowth of
Camden. Right, Cherry Hill is an outgrowth of Camden, correct.
For Griff in the show where you were a number of years ago.
At that what?
You visited. You were a scholar resident there when we lived there.
Wow, very nice.
A portrait of Rev Riff.
Very nice. No, Rav Riff was...
You're muted.
What, Jack?
I can't hear you. You're muted.
I'm muted. Yomo.
We can't hear you.
I understand. I'm trying to reach Yomo. It's Yomo. He heard me now. He's getting up. He's coming. Why do we have these problems?
Can
you hear me now?
Now we can hear you.
Okay. Mark, I want to just tell you that Rabbi Riff was a Shem Dover. People revered him. But the joker is, and this not many people know, that when the Gedolei Yisrael Asad Synagogue Council and Mixed Board of Rabbis, Rabbi Riff was president of the Camden Cherry Hill Board of Rabbis. You follow, or the South New Jersey, I forget what it was called already. They had a board of rabbis, and he was the president. Okay, Jack, the article on Voloshin played very big, but my question is, why Yad Vashem didn't take it? She tells in the interview that she offered it to Yad Vashem, they weren't interested. Don't understand that. It's a value. It doesn't belong in Poland. It belongs in Israel. All right, you'll say it's online, so it's all over. But no, it belongs in Israel, the actual postcards. It's fascinating, fascinating. Okay, I want to wish everyone bracha v'hatzlacha. It should be a meaningful Holocaust day today, and we should only have besora tovot. Who's speaking? I can't hear. Mark, I can't hear you. It's not coming through. Mark Licht.
The
He's not muted.
I'm not saying anything.
Ah, you're not saying. Okay, I heard some. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness.
Das
verdanya.